Case for argument is Estate of Luster versus Allstate. Mr. Bauer.
Good morning, Your Honors. Attorney Stephen Bauer on behalf of the appellant, Wavy Luster Estate. As the court knows, this is an appeal concerning a dispute with Allstate over fire insurance coverage. And although we have an adhesion contract here, as Wavy Luster at 83 certainly wasn't in the position of negotiating the terms of her homeowner's policy insurance with Allstate, the parties are bound by the language that's in the agreement, and that's really where I want to begin and want to end, quite frankly. Here's what we're up against.
But could I ask you, before we go into that, I mean, there are a couple of terms in this agreement, but the thing that really stands out is that a very long period of time goes by in which the insurance company is not notified that this is no longer an owner-occupied dwelling. And the insurance company takes the position, as I understand it here, that this leads, presumptively anyway, to an increase in the hazard when they figured out their underwriting, amounts. That was not a hazard that they expected, and this is not the situation of somebody who just goes down to Florida for a vacation or somebody who is off temporarily taking care of someone. Whatever Mrs. Luster's hopes may have been, it must have become quite clear at some point that she wasn't moving back home.
Your Honor, that's the exact issue. I suggest that the policy in here resolves that. There is two exclusions in the policy concerning occupancy, and that has to do with the vandalism and malicious mischief section, as well as the freezing of pipes, that if the premises are left unoccupied or vacant, that is an exclusion. The substantial change or the increase in the hazard does not talk about the property being unoccupied.
Wouldn't any change that led to an increase in the hazard? I mean, I'm going to come to the point in a minute. I'm not sure that having Mrs. Luster leave the house necessarily increased the hazard. I mean, some people who are old and senile accidentally leave coffee pots on and cause the place to catch on fire. You know, for all I know, it decreased the hazard. But in any event, the assumption seems to be that increases the hazard when the owner leaves.
Judge, that's exactly what the senior Judge Miller, in my view, the Judge Miller, in the opinion that he wrote at the trial level, he equated the fact that she had left the house as equivalent to an increase in the hazard. The language that's in the contract doesn't talk.
Well, but you have the 30 consecutive days.
Judge, exactly right. What that has to deal with, Your Honor, is the issue of vandalism and malicious mischief.
But it looks as if the fire was caused by the vandals, the thieves, and of course the house had been unoccupied for years.
Well, but certainly.
Why isn't that provision controlling here?
Well, the provision is controlling, but it doesn't resolve this dispute.
Is it your point that there are facts about this? I mean, I guess Judge Miller never decided whether this was an arson or whether it was something else. Is it your view that if he had decided that issue in favor of arson, that you lose? Seems to me you have to say yes to that. I mean, if Judge Miller had looked at the evidence which Allstate was presenting and it said this was arson, this was malicious mischief, whatever, then you lose because it had been unoccupied.
Not necessarily.
Well, I know this can be your death argument, right?
that would be the worst position that I could be in. My response to that would be that really conflicts with the other provision in the contract that says after the death of the insurer, there still should be continued coverage.
No, I don't find that persuasive. The death provision seems to be a situation in which you want to prevent a break in coverage, So you create a, you know, a, you have a successor. The person has died, and his legal representative, her legal representative, becomes the successor, and in that way, there's no lapse of coverage. You don't want to have a lapse of coverage just because a person has suddenly died. I don't know why that would extend coverage, because, I mean, suppose that after the 30 days, she lost coverage. After the house was unoccupied for 30 days, she had no coverage if there was damage because of vandalism. Then I don't think that death provision is intended to somehow restore coverage for some brief period after she dies. What would be the logic of that? Why would that happen?
Well, it's inconsistent, Judge. If the insurance says that coverage continues after the death of the insured.
There is coverage before, but if the coverage had lapsed because of the more than 30 days with no notice to the insurance company, then I don't think that death provision is intended to make coverage that has lapsed spring back into.
Judge, I need to redirect you if I may. The 30 days of.
If the insurance company had been notified years earlier, as it should have been, then it would have either canceled the policy or it would have demanded higher premiums or a new policy or something of that sort.
But I thought you were arguing that the insurance company, under Indiana law anyway, has waived the right to rely on the failure to notify.
Yes, that's also, and that's probably the strongest argument that we have.
I don't understand that argument. Let me see what the waiver was.
Because they collected the premiums for 2 years after they clearly knew that she was gone.
Yes, and that the claim was made. And
well, they had no right to the premiums. That doesn't mean they did return the premiums.
Well, two years and 4 months later, but they also continued to bill and accept new premiums.
If this was their argument that our underwriting people weren't talking to the billing people, I mean, I thought that was weak.
I think that's invalid. I mean, we've cited authority on that. Where this whole thing comes back to is in our view, this contract does not say that it is automatically an increase in the hazard for this property if the owner is absent from the home for 30 days. What it says about the 30 days of unoccupancy is that it affects a claim for vandalism. And once again, a secondary or backup argument that we have is it's a factual determination on whether or not this was arson in the fire, spontaneous combustion, or undetermined.
Mr. Bauer,
yes, Judge.
Judge Miller decided the case on the first point. He decided the case on whether the policy had lapsed.
Yes.
Now, let's assume that we agree with you on that and believe that Judge Miller was wrong. What happens to the case at that point? There are two exclusions that are possible. They were raised in the summary judgment motion by Allstate. Is there some further proceedings in the district court that need to take place before we could rule on the applicability of those exclusions?
Yes, because it's got to be a fact determination as to whether or not it was in fact arson if we're going to have a factual determination under exclusion number 20. So that would have to be that. Also, there is a review of whether or not the facts support a waiver under existing Indiana law.
I know. Well, let's put that the waiver issue aside just for a moment. With respect to the exclusions that have not yet been ruled on by either Judge Miller or obviously by us, what is the significance of the expert testimony about which I understand there were motions to strike that
yes.
have not yet been ruled upon.
Yes. Not, the Judge Miller determined that they were moot. There was an opinion rendered by an insurer, or by a company hired by Allstate, that although they could not find evidence that an accelerant was used, they attempted to rule out all identifiable causes of the fire, and therefore concluded on that basis that it had to be arson.
Arson by exclusion of other sources.
Yes. To which we have objected and tendered argument on that. That would have to be resolved on remand. We think, though, quite frankly, under existing Indiana law, the facts support waiver in this thing very, very strongly. 2 years, 4 months before the return of premiums, continuation of billing and collection of premiums simply waives this problem.
Now, Mr. Bauer, if I may go back to the ground upon which Chief Judge Miller did reach. With respect to that ground, you indicate that you believe that there was a waiver on the part of Allstate.
Yes.
What is your understanding of the law of Indiana with respect to what has to be shown on a waiver?
Unreasonable delay on behalf of the insurance company.
And they do not have to show prejudice.
No, we don't. There is no requirement in the old case decisions on this. The determination's got to be made by the district court judges. Was there prompt action taken by the insurance company to revoke, cancel, and refund?
So you believe the district court was wrong as a matter of Indiana law?
Yes. Thank you.
I think you have a problem. I mean, there are, I don't know if it's applicable here, but there is the general view that waiver doesn't require prejudice because waiver is some deliberate decision saying, you know, it's not like forfeiture. It's just saying, no, I won't make that argument, something of that sort. I don't see the waiver here. There was never notification to the insurance company of the vacating of the house.
But I think
you
there
say
was.
They
is that correct?
In 2006, when the claim
yeah.
was presented, they were Alan squarely John. Notified. It was just a different department.
No, I thought the argument was that from letters from the attorney, they would have understood that it was vacant.
Judge, I was.
I didn't think they'd. But correct me if I'm wrong. I didn't think they received a notice which said, you know, pursuant to the policy, we're informing you. This house has been it will be unoccupied for more than 30 days.
No, that's correct, Your Honor. July the 30th, 2006, about 4 days after the fire, Allstate.
I'm not talking about after the fire. What is it you rely on for notice to Allstate? Allstate is collecting premiums throughout, even though there was no coverage. And, of course, that's a problem if they were doing it deliberately and they say, that, I mean, you know, great, we'll collect premiums, and then if there's a fire, we won't have to pay because the policy has lapsed. That, of course, is improper. But I didn't think that was what was happening. I thought the argument was they should have realized that the house was unoccupied, and realizing that, they would have said to themselves, well, of course, we can't continue collecting premiums.
Judge, that argument was advanced.
Is that correct? Is that?
Well, that was advanced at the trial court, rejected by Judge Miller.
No. Answer my question. Was that how Allstate learned about this, or was it actually given a notification, this house is unoccupied, and we have to, you know, and that might make it more hazardous, and therefore we're notifying you as we're required to do by the policy.
No, there was no official notification to that.
So I don't see the waiver, right? I mean, negligence. I'm sorry. What?
Well, whether it's relevant or not, I mean, there could be other arguments about this. But your point is that 4 days after the fire in 2006, they're told the house is unoccupied, and Allstate then, for the next 2 years and several months, continues to collect the premiums until October 2008. So that's the 2 years that you're relying on. Whether that, you know, it's post-fire, so it's post-risk, but that's the 2 years, right?
Yes. Now, Mr. Bowers, what does the record show about how 4 days after the fire, Allstate was informed that the house was unoccupied?
The personal representative called and notified the Allstate insurance agent that had issued the policy.
And that's in conformity with the instructions in the policy, is it not?
Yes. Thank you.
But wait a second. These cases, I think, make clear that the problem with collecting the premiums after you've received notice is that you're hurting the insured, because you're not letting the insured know that he doesn't have coverage. You let him know. So suppose they sent a notice, you know, after the first 30 days elapsed, after she'd been gone for 30 days, they sent a letter to Allstate, and they said, look, we're notifying you that the house is no longer occupied. And we still want the insurance, right? We want the insurance. We have to notify you. Now, we hope you'll continue to insure the house with the same premiums, but if not, please let us know, because we have to make alternative arrangements. We want to make sure the house is insured. Now, if Allstate didn't answer and just kept collecting premiums, then it would be stuck, because it would have prejudiced the insured. But there's no prejudice to the insured here, because there was no notification until after the fire, right? There's no prejudice.
Well, maybe if there's some explicit waiver,
you don't need prejudice, but you can see what the cases are getting at. They don't want the insured to be fooled and fail to take precautions to line up substitute insurance.
Judge, the insured was prejudiced because for two years and 4 months, personal representative in the estate thought that he had homeowner's insurance coverage on that property, which included insurance coverage for liability and other things.
So maybe an exclusion would have applied, but otherwise the policy, they thought, was in effect.
Well, certainly.
But was there further damage afterwards?
No, but, Judge,
What's the prejudice? That is to say,
if the
insurance company collects premiums when there's no coverage, but nothing happens, right, then the only prejudice to the insured is that he was paying premiums for illusory coverage, and he's entitled to his premiums back, I assume, with interest.
And that's,
but that's not the same thing as having the rug pulled out from under you as an insured, and an accident happens, and the insurance company tells you, well, very sorry, we've been collecting your premiums, and we never told you your coverage had lapsed, but it did lapse. And that's not what happened here.
Now, but Indiana law requires that if the insurance company is going to take the position,
I think if you look at the Indiana cases, their concern is with the insured. I mean, I'm looking at this one of these cases, Protective Insurance Company versus Coca-Cola. They'll say where the insured is not prejudiced as a result of the insurer's delay in disclaiming liability, there's no implied waiver as a matter of law, and the insurer is not estopped to deny liability. That seems to me to be our case.
I disagree, Judge, because they're talking, the other cases that we have cited, the older cases, talk about the obligation that if there is a legitimate basis for the insurance company to cancel the contract, to cancel the insurance, they must promptly return the funds. That's the particular waiver. That's a little bit of a different animal than the Coca-Cola case and the other cases.
You'd like to have remedies that are matched to the harm. If you're collecting people's premiums, that you're not entitled to it, you know, then you have quantum merit, breach of contract, whatever, to get the premiums back, and maybe with interest or anything. But not fire damage, if the fire damage is completely unrelated to the fact that the insurance company continued collecting premiums.
Judge, that's the same argument as the fact that she was hospitalized and out of the home prior to her death. There was no loss during that period of time. So there was no damage to Allstate. See, Judge, it goes both ways. We can't give the best position to the insurance company. And that's what we're saying.
The insurance company gives back the premiums with interest. The insurance company has gained nothing from this whole business, right? Nothing.
And, of course, the estate
of Wayne Lester. They never would have had to pay for the fire damage because of the 30-day rule.
Well,
so if you give, because you want your client either has gotten the premiums back or will get them back and so on. So you want premiums, which will make you whole, plus this windfall consisting of indemnity for a fire loss, which was not covered by the policy.
Judge, we don't expect a windfall.
It is a windfall. Well,
if we get the insurance coverage,
well, you're not getting the premiums back. Is that it?
Premiums go, but if they get a credit, Allstate would get a credit. I mean, this estate's not looking
to make money. Well, that's pretty funny.
I
mean, now you're creating an insurance policy after the loss occurs. I mean, that would be a great deal. You go to a company and say, I had a loss, so if you insure me, I'll pay you premiums.
Oh, Judge. Our position is that the insurance was in effect all the way up to the tail end.
No, it wasn't in effect because the 30-day rule. It lapsed. Oh. It went away. In fact, you yourself said your strongest argument was waiver.
That doesn't mean I'm abandoning
the other.
Which,
of course, implies that there was no insurance coverage.
Well, that's a backup position. We think...
No, waiver was your primary position. You said so.
Well, yes.
Yeah, so the backup. Okay, well, thank you. Well, we understand your argument. So, Mr. Haley?
Good morning, Your Honors, Counsel. May it please the Court. Judge, if I may address the point you were talking about a moment ago, to be more accurate about when the notification reached the insurance company that the home had been not used, not occupied by Mrs. Lester. It's actually more than just 4 days after the fire. 4 days after the fire is when the claim was submitted. Then Allstate responded, assigned an adjuster, found out it was a fire, had a cause and origin expert hired to investigate the scene, began adjusting the claim and responding to the submission, found out that there were questions of coverage, asked to take the examination under oath of Mr. Jekas, her attorney, in fact, and her personal representative of her estate. And it was at that time, several months after the claim was actually submitted, that the information came that she was not living there, had left more than 4.5 years ago, was living in the care facility, and had never returned to her home.
So I have a question for you about the hazard exclusion in the policy, which is whether you think that increase in hazard is a question of fact or a question of law.
Under the record in this case, Judge, I think the record...
Why does that vary depending on the case?
Well, if the length of time is a questionable factor, a reasonable question over which reasonable minds could disagree, then that might make it a fact question. I think
here, what it says, or at least, I mean, there are a couple of things that talk about increase. It gives Allstate, in one part, the right to cancel if there has been a substantial change or increase in hazard in the risk we originally accepted. And so there's also loss is not covered. This is one of the exclusions. Loss is not covered by any substantial change or increase in hazard if change or increase by any means within the control or knowledge. And so the reason I'm interested in whether you see this is something that a judge can just look at and know that something was an increase in hazard, or whether facts need to be found. And so I'll give you extreme hypotheticals. You know, Allstate's position seems to be if the owner's not living in the house, there's automatically an increase in hazard. And what I would suggest is it really might depend on the circumstances. If Mrs. Luster had hired a private security service to have four armed men around the house at all times, day and night, 24/7, patrolling, and it had the police coming by and all sorts of things, the house might have been very snug and less hazard than you thought when just some old 83-year-old woman is living there. So it strikes me that there are lots of different factual scenarios that might either increase or decrease the hazard. You could have a house sitter that would be the equivalent of Mrs. Luster. Maybe that's not an increase in hazard. You could have all kinds of things. So if this is a question of fact, then how can we figure out whether this exclusion applies without exploring the facts?
I don't think there's a reasonable dispute of fact on that factor or that issue in this case, Judge.
Why not? She was 83 years old.
Because she left the home.
It may have been worse off with her in there than it was with her gone, because she had a neighbor stopping by, she had the utilities on, she had the personal representative looking at the house, and very elderly people sometimes, you know, are risky.
Yes, but the factor that Judge Miller relied on, which is recognized much more in the case law, Your Honor, is that unoccupancy of a house, a vacancy of a house that had been used as a primary residence.
See, this, I think, is your problem. Your problem is you have two potentially applicable provisions here. One is 8, the increase in hazard. The other is vandalism after 30 days. Now, the vandalism after 30 days doesn't require any showing of enhanced hazard.
That is correct, Judge.
The problem, of course, is that you have to have proof that the vandalism caused the damage.
Correct.
That's the problem.
And that's
so Judge Miller didn't get to that point because he thought it was Wood was suggesting. He sort of took it as common knowledge or legal principle or something that an unoccupied house is more hazardous. But Judge Wood is correct, certainly, that that's not always true when you're dealing with very old people. But I thought you started to say this hadn't been raised, maybe, this issue of... Does the other side suggest that there was no increase in hazard or...
No, I think the factor that Judge Miller relied on was not just a notion, Judge. It's recognized in the case law.
But I think what Judge Wood said was correct, that if you have a very old person living by herself, she can cause a lot of inadvertent damage.
Well, but the question is, what happened here? Does that constitute an increase in hazard?
Well,
a lot of people won't let
though.
Their old relatives
yeah,
live by themselves
precisely.
because they're so worried about an accident.
And what you're trying to say is because in case law, people have said things like, well, we all know, you know, that an unoccupied house is subject to greater risk. I guess what I'm asking, you know, are we taking judicial notice of some set of facts out there? Or, I mean, I don't know of any law that says that. I don't know how you can decide something like that as a matter of law. And even you began by saying the circumstances of this case are things that we need to take into account. But if we're going to take some circumstances of this case into account, it seems like we need to take the rest of them.
And what we have is she did not live there for four and a half years.
We're all
there was no
that.
Regular presence in the home, Judge. And the issuance of a home...
I thought the record said that the utilities were left on. She has Mr. Gikas or Gikas, and she's got the neighbor coming by. And, in fact, nothing happens to the house until after her death. So well, whatever she was doing seems to have worked.
Nothing happened that resulted in damage that an insurance claim was submitted on. We don't know what happened.
So from Allstate's point of view, nothing happened to the house. No one came knocking on your door, right?
That resulted in a claim, no.
Right.
But if we are going to consider the more notions of what happens to houses that are not occupied.
What about vacation? What about people's vacation houses?
Those cases are discussed and distinguished, Judge.
Well, wait a second. How are they distinguished? If you leave your house, your vacation house, for more than 30 days, does that mean your insurance lapses, or is there special vacation house insurance?
There is a separate type of policy for periods of time or houses that are unoccupied. Or are that for rental purposes and may go for some period of time?
Well, I'm not talking about rental purposes. I'm talking about someone owns a vacation house. Maybe some rich person owns multiple houses, so that he's away from each of his houses for more than 30 days. Are there special policies for that, or is it your argument that those people actually have no insurance coverage?
No, there are different types of policies for that, Judge, and they're rated differently, and the risk is considered differently because the lack of occupancy and the fact that there are no inhabitants there on a regular basis to make sure that the coffee pots are turned off, that storm damage, if it occurs while someone is
addressed.
They
offer these policies that if they're away, you say 30 days, that's...
Well, see, that's what
could
worries
be one
me.
Day, right?
Suppose it's somebody's
yeah.
primary residence, let's say hypothetically a federal judge who decides to go teach in Europe for 6 weeks in the summer and leaves the house with the utilities on and tells the neighbor, you know, would you stop by? I guess there's no insurance in that house.
Not necessarily, Judge, but the cases that are discussed
well,
in the brief...
Well, but I don't know how that's distinguished from Mrs. Luster's house.
That's distinguished from this
because
situation
you come
where...
back after 6 weeks instead of 4 years?
That didn't happen, Judge. If she had, that might have been a different...
What about Judge Wood's hypothetical? The judge or the professor is someone who goes and teaches in the summer for 30 days or 60 days and leaves his house unoccupied except, you know, taking various precautions, having a neighbor check in once a week, something like that. Is that person lost coverage?
Not necessarily.
I don't like your not necessarily. That bothers me.
Well, in your hypothetical...
The person would like to know whether he has insurance or doesn't have insurance.
Did he intend to return?
Yeah, he intends to return.
All right.
Is that enough?
Is that his primary residence?
That makes no sense, right?
Is that still
it makes
his
no
primary
sense
residence?
For your argument.
These
you
are the
say
factors
that
are used to analyze
look,
that.
Look, if you say that of course, if a house is unoccupied for a significant period, which seems to be 30 days, it's more hazardous. Why does the fact that a person intends to come back have anything to do with that? That has to do with the interval, but doesn't have to do with your proposition that an unoccupied house is always more hazardous than an occupied one.
Because it has to do with how and why a homeowner's policy is insurance and insurance is issued in the first place to a person who says,
this policy,
I'm going to use this
identical,
as my primary residence.
Suppose this identical policy is issued to a person. It is the person's primary residence. There's no discussion about how much time the person spends there. Maybe he has 10 houses, right? So
actually, the expectation of a primary residence is that it would be lived there.
And a person would never spend more than 30 days in a year away from that residence?
No, that's why sometimes you do look at how much time they're there when a loss occurs.
I don't understand. What do you know when you get it? When you take out one of these standard insurance policies, what are you supposed to understand about whether you have coverage if you leave the house unoccupied for significant periods?
Number one, and probably the strongest point that we have, Judge, listed at the top of page 3 of our brief, citing the insurance policy that says the insured must notify the insurance company in any change of use or occupancy of the residence premises, which is defined as your primary residence.
You're not tracking my question. There is no change in the use of the premises. So I go, I get this I apply for this insurance. There's no discussion about how much time I actually spend in the house. It's a fact, let's say I go away every summer for 3 months. Now, am I insured or not insured?
There is discussion of whether that's your primary residence, Judge.
It is my primary residence because I'm there 9 months of the year and I'm somewhere else 3 months. My question is, am I insured?
Did you still maintain that as your primary residence? Yes.
What
did
kind you of question is that? I just told you it's my primary residence. I spend 9 months a year, every year. And then I spend 3 months in the summer somewhere else. There's no change. Now, my question is, am I insured?
Under that example, I believe you would be.
But you just said that leaving a house unoccupied, you know, for 30 days is hazardous, and this is 90 days. Why doesn't that increase the hazard?
Because I think we have to decide these cases as they come up. And in
that
this case,
doesn't make any sense to me at all. People want to know whether they have insurance. So what's special about my case? A lot of people, professors and so on, spend the summer away.
Then you go to your agent and you say, this is where I'm going to live. However, I want you to know I have another house in Florida, and I insure it down there, and I'm gone 5 months out of the year.
I'm 3 months. Now, just stick to my example, would you please? 3 months. Is it my duty to tell that to an insurance agent?
If that is a change in use or occupancy...
It's not a change, I keep saying. Don't change my facts. Right? 9 months in one house, 3 months in another. Now, do I have a duty when I apply for the insurance to say, oh, by the way, I don't spend every day in my house? I go away in summers?
In your example, Judge, is there anyone else still in the home?
No.
Then I believe you'd have to tell the insurance agent that.
Do they ask?
They ask whether it's the primary residence.
It is the primary residence. Do they ask me also whether you're there all the time, whether there's a person there all the time? Is that the...
They will ask about how many inhabitants there are in the house. They will ask how often it is occupied. The issuance of a homeowner's
policy... So what if I say there's just me and... I'm there 9 months, and the other 3 months I'm in Florida.
Then they use that information in deciding whether to issue the policy, how to rate the policy,
well,
how congested
your... I think your position is they wouldn't issue this policy because they'd say, oh, this is hazardous. You're away from the house. That's hazard. Isn't that your proposition?
Where she has been gone for 4.5 years.
That's not the issue. It doesn't matter whether it's 4.5 years or 30 days, right?
Well, there are grounds in the policy for...
Because you think the policy lapsed after 30 days.
There are grounds in the policy for finding no coverage under this claim submitted because it had been vacant for more than 30 days. That's correct, Judge. But there are also the two other grounds. So actually a total of three that were argued to the district court. Judge Miller found on the first two and did not rule on the vacancy with loss caused by vandalism or malicious mischief with the arson evidence, as he just found.
Well, just
it
one
moved.
Final
so would have
one
to be
final question.
Submitted back to the, I agree that
one
that would have to be submitted.
Wait a second. One final question. Is it clear? Is it so clear that the vandals caused the fire that if we thought that paragraph 4 didn't apply but paragraph 20 didn't, we wouldn't have to remand it, or would there have to be a factual determination about the cause of the fire?
Well, given that Judge Miller did not decide that on this record, you could remand it to the district court. If you want to consider what was submitted but what was not ruled on by Judge Miller, the evidence was that the local fire department...
I understand. Okay, well, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Haley. So, of course. Yes, sorry.
I have one more question, Mr. Haley. With respect to the possibility of waiver, let's assume, arguendo, that we think there's a waiver here and a question or a possible waiver here. And we have to confront this issue where Judge Miller view was that really you have to the insured has to show harm before Allstate can be stuck with a waiver. You didn't address that issue at all in your brief. Do you have a position on it, or is it, or is there really no position that you can take in defense of Judge Miller, or where do you stand?
No, I think the position in the cases that Judge Miller cited and the recitation that Judge Posner gave earlier is correct, that where there cannot be shown any prejudice, then the argument cannot be used to extend coverage. And first of all, we don't think you even get to the prejudice question because there should not be a finding of waiver or estoppel here. Because,
I understand.
Okay. Now, if you do get to that, was there any prejudice? No, because the company department with the responsibility of acting on notice that premiums were still being charged when coverage didn't exist, as soon as it found that out, it did refund all of the premium and interest all the way back to 2001.
Of course, there is no requirement in the policy that a particular division of the company be notified, is there?
Not in the policy, but there's a requirement in the case law that the actor, this is a company, so it can only act by the actors of its individuals and its employees. And there is provision in the case law that's cited that says knowledge must be provided to an agent of the company with the authority of responding to that information. And that is the underwriting department. And as soon as that information got to the underwriting department, it did act very, very promptly. I think the other point on the waiver and
I think you made a mistake there because I'm looking at the policy and it says you must inform us of any change in title, use, or occupancy.
That is correct.
Isn't that a duty to note? I mean, it's not in the case not the case law. Doesn't the agreement itself require? Didn't it require Mrs. Luster or Geekus to notify the fact that the property was no longer occupied?
It did, but those are two separate points, Judge. Your point is good, and I think that's the strongest basis for affirming the district court, is they didn't notify us of a change in use or occupancy.
You never really argued that as a ground.
Pardon me?
You didn't argue lack of notification as a ground. You were all about the hazards and the vandalism and all the rest of this. I don't see that square argument ever presented by Allstate.
Well, I believe that's in the briefs filed in the district court and in this court, Judge, that's one of the three grounds that the provision policy requires change in use or occupancy to provide notice to the company, and they didn't do that. That's in our brief. I'll look it up.
Okay, no, we'll find it.
So, Judge Posner, there are two different points there. They should have notified us of that.
Your table of content does say Luster failed to reside in or occupy the property and never notified Allstate of the change in occupancy.
Correct. The two distinct points, Judge, from what your observation, one is they have notified us of change of use or occupancy of the policy, and they didn't for 4.5 years. What the other question of notice goes to is when notice reached the company representatives with responsibility to refund the premium, they did so right away.
Okay, well, thank you, Mr. Haley. And Mr. Bauer, his time expired, but you can have another minute if you'd like.
Judge, very briefly, if in truth and fact, under this ruling, if you affirm this as it's written, anyone who is absent from a home that's insured by Allstate is going to have a lapse. That's what it comes down to. They may have a strong argument because Wavy Luster was incapacitated for a long period of time, but as Your Honor directly pointed out, that's not what's relevant, the length of time. It's the absence from the home. And if ordinary people are looking at this insurance, if we ask people on the street, they would think that if they were sick and hospitalized for 35 days, their homeowner's policy would not lapse, nor would they be required to fill the form.
I mean, it does say pretty explicitly that you must inform us of any change in title, use, or occupancy. That's not a technical language. That's pretty clear. You said at the outset of your argument, people are bound, are required to, or are charged with notice of the terms of their policy, at least if they're intelligible English, which this is. They have a duty of notification, which GECAS didn't fulfill.
Is it a real change in use?
This is certainly a change of occupancy. Even if it didn't happen after 30 days, after 4.5 years, you'd want to say, yeah, there has been a change in occupancy here. There's no occupant.
Well,
it might not increase the hazard for the reasons Judge Wood suggested, but there is a duty of notice.
If you feel that it does not increase the hazard, then we're back to the vandalism.
No, we may well be back to paragraph 20. Sure, now that's certainly a serious consideration. Yes. Well, thank you very much to both counsel for a very interesting argument.